Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. And I always fail to say that I'm sure Adrian's giving a good Manhattan welcome from yes. The Big Apple, New York, over on the other side of the country. So we got you covered on both sides. I'm Dave, the caregiver's caregiver. That's Adrian over there. And we are just thrilled that things are going well, that the sky is blue, that we have world peace so far, and the birds are singing. Anyway, the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network hosts us, as well as other platforms, YouTube, iTunes, etc. Our goal here is to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout, which some people would say is worse than war. It's their own war. Anyway, we do have an exciting show planned for you today, believe it or not. Today, we will be interviewing each other, Adrian and I, discussing my newly released best-selling book. It's My Life 2, Reclaim Your Caregiver Sanity by Learning When to Say Yes and When to Say No. You will not want to miss this show. I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and the show's the caregivers of every single kind, and there are a lot of kinds out there. And one thing we know about caregivers is that they are just wonderful, caring, selfless, sacrificial souls, and they have this tiny little problem. It's just so tiny that they're prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. They give and give and give and give and give until there's nothing left to give, and then they're out. They're out of the game. You're out of there. But we can learn a lesson from the airlines because they tell us in the event of an emergency to put your own oxygen mask on first. And, you know, that's good advice before you help your loved one with their mask. Does that sounds selfish. Doesn't it? That sounds like a selfish thing to do.
Well,
but you know what? No, it's not selfish. It's survival. caregivers just have the wrong definition of the word selfish, don't they, Adrian?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay.
It's so self.
If you don't take care of you, you can't take care of anybody. That includes you. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it can have on us. Anytime we suffer a loss, you know, we lose a girlfriend, we lose our shoe, we lose our health, we lose a spouse, we go through a grief process. It could take days. It could take weeks, months, years. Some people never get through it. But that's not healthy. So there's only one way out of the grief process, and that's to go through it. You can't avoid it. You got to go through it. And if you feel like you're kind of stuck in your grief, we can help you, you know, move along without rushing you too much because everyone has to grieve in their own time. But, you know, 5 years is probably too long to grieve. And some would say 1 year is too long to grieve. And some would say 6 months is too long. But it all depends. And I do want to take this moment and thank my last week's guest, Hector De La Torre, The Many Faces of Caregiving. And you can hear that show on my website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And just a reminder, all our shows, including this one, are eventually on our website and on YouTubes and on iTunes and all of that stuff. So I am so excited. I am in the midst of my national media and book tour talking about my new book. It's My Life 2, Reclaim Your Caregiver Sanity. So far, I have done shows in Palm Springs and three cities in South Carolina, Columbia, Charleston, and Mount Pleasant. And I'm home briefly for a week, and Charlene appreciates that. I find people who can do slumber parties with her while I'm gone. And she had a lot of fun in her
pajamas. That's what you think.
Yeah. So I'm home briefly, and then on Monday I'm off to Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I've never been there. Rock Island, Illinois. Didn't even know that place existed. And then 3 days back at home briefly, and then I'm off again for 5 days to Ronco and Bristol, Virginia, two places that I did not also know existed, Knoxville and Johnson City, Tennessee, and then back home for 10 days, then off again to Savannah and Atlanta, Georgia. And in Georgia, I'm meeting with a bunch of producers from the top 30 markets in metropolitan cities. Many of them produce national shows. And hopefully by the time I do my 11th show and I get to Nashville, not Nashville, Atlanta, I'll be so much better. Because I notice each time I do a show, I get better and better and better because I get a little more confident. I get a little less uhs and ums. And you know, I get to the point quicker and I'm funnier. And so, you know, it's a good thing. And now I know I'm going to get a bunch of bookings from them, eventually getting to, L.A., Chicago, and Adrian City, New York. You know, they say if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. Right, Adrian?
Absolutely.
All right. Gotta,
be nice to have you on the East Coast.
It would be nice because that's where I originally came from. Brooklyn, Bay Ridge, Prospect Park, you know, all those places. Anyway, my new book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. We had a book signing in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. Had a good turnout. And we're having another local one here in Santa Clarita, California. And wherever, you know, we think we need another one. Let's see. So I think that's enough of that. A big welcome to my guest, me and Adrian. Or more properly, Adrian and I. Welcome to the show, Adrian, and thanks for agreeing to come here every single week, rain or shine, unless it's an emergency.
Unless it's an emergency.
And we know caregivers and even former caregivers have lots of emergencies. So you know what we're going to talk about today? We're going to talk about my book, of course, because that's all I've been talking about. But we're just going to talk about some topics in here, and Adrian and I are just going to discuss, you know, go a little deeper into the things that caregivers need to know. You know, one thing that these hosts asked me, what are the three most common mistakes that caregivers make? And the first one that I immediately think of is they don't put their needs first. Would you agree, Adrian, that that's number one, or at least pretty up there?
Yeah, it's got to be number one.
Yeah, and I actually, you know, like to take an oxygen mask. I can't find a real oxygen mask that's on the airlines. I know I bought one on Amazon, but it's going to take 2 weeks to come. So my cousin, who's freaked out about North Korea, gave me a gas mask. He says, here, try this. So I don't know if they'll wear that. So when I was in Palm Springs, and you'll see, instead of my usual commercials, I'm going to put on a couple of the shows for the commercials is really fun. And he actually put on the gas mask. You know, now, you know, what you learn from this is that when you put your needs first, you can also take care of your loved one's needs after you're going to be around. So what do you think of when you think of caregivers not putting their needs first? How does that look to the caregiver and to the loved one?
Well, I mean, I think one of the first things before you can find the time to take care of yourself, if you're talking about two different kinds of care, I think making sure that you keep in touch with the outside world, that you don't isolate as much as caregivers tend to isolate.
And what's so bad about isolating? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah. It'll make you a little crazy, you know. You feel sorry for yourself. Self-pity is a terrible thing, and if that starts to plague you, then your caregiving is really going to suffer. It's not going to be done with love for a very long time. It's going to turn into resentment.
You know, human beings weren't made to be alone and isolated and not have friends. When you're in prison, what do they do when you're bad and they punish you? They isolate you.
Yeah.
Solitary confinement.
Right.
They put you in a small little dark room with no windows and no little light cracks under the door, you know, because
just a little thing to shove the plate through.
Yeah. And I went to jail when I was a teenager for 15 minutes, and my father fortunately was dating an attorney, and he got me out really fast. But I haven't been in jail in 45 years, and I'm very proud of that. When I heard that door close and went, and I said, oh my God, when am I getting out of here? It just shook me up as a teenager. I think I was 17. And I said, I never want to be in this place again. And I made sure that I never was. And in fact, I was so fortunate, God smiled upon me because they forgot to read me my rights or something. So it's been totally expunged. So I have a clean record. Not even my foolish teenage years is going to blemish that. So not everybody can say that.
So you can open a restaurant with a liquor license.
Yes, I actually have a gas station, and at one point I did have a beer license, and I passed.
You passed. Yeah. It really comes in handy to have a clean record sometimes.
It does come in handy sometimes. We won't ask about your past.
No, I've never been in jail. Steve had been in jail, though.
So, you know, in my book, we talk about the most. Can you guess what the two most important words? It's probably not fair because I think you read the book. But what did you say if you didn't read the book? The two most important words that a caregiver should know.
Help.
I make it easy on you. The one, if you had to take a word away from a caregiver's vocabulary, what word shouldn't it be?
Help.
That's a good word. I was thinking of no.
Oh, well, there's no. Well, so it's always a qualified no.
Sure, sure. You know, my wife is so cute because she's speech impaired, and she actually knows about 100 words if she would just, you know, rack through her brain and say, okay, what other words, you know, but that takes a long time to get those 100 words out of her. But mm-hmm. the words that are like right on the tip of her tongue, there's only about 12 of them really. Mm-hmm. And yes and no are the big ones.
Of course.
And no, she says a lot. And I'm amazed at how many different ways she can say no. And each way she says no means a different thing, you know, like just no, 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 you know, and it's like, it's true.
She's got 85%, a repertoire.
She does, because you know you only have 12 strings on your violin, so how are you going to play them? You know, you gotta be creative. And so caregivers, this is the whole thing about boundaries too. You know, this whole book series on boundaries for this people and boundaries for this group, and caregivers need boundaries because they don't have any typically. And when the loved ones violate or cross the boundaries, or when anybody crosses the boundaries, it's really their fault because they never told anyone that there was a boundary there. So obviously, you know, if you don't put a fence up in your yard, people are mm-hmm. going to walk into your yard. Dogs, animals, cows, people. And unless you tell them, you know, there's a line there, or better yet, put up a fence so they can see, oh, I better not cross that line. And so that's what happens. Caregivers need to just make little boundaries. For example, can you give me an example of, because you were caregiving your mother, were there some examples where you had to have a boundary between you and her, and maybe she crossed it, maybe you didn't put it up, and then maybe you had to institute it later on?
Well, yeah, it was very simple for me to voice what that boundary was. Her complaint, she was widowed, and my father had been her caregiver. The old story of the caregiver dying before the patient. And
30%, by the way, that happens. 30% of caregivers, they die before the patient. And the ones that don't die, they live, but then they become sicker.
And then they need a long distance caregiver in the shape of the daughter, generally. Well, that's most common.
If they're lucky,
I think
they have a daughter. Yeah.
Yeah. With my mother, it was keeping her from complaining about my father. I didn't want to hear.
He was alive or dead at the time?
No, he had passed away. And he had
so
been
nothing.
So she's
complaining about the dead. Oh my gosh.
Yes,
I thought there was a law against that.
and I told her, I said, you were married for over 50 years.
Oh, wow.
And if you ever say anything against him while I'm here again, I'm leaving and I'm not coming back. It worked.
Wow.
After years of that, it finally stopped. And then the other one was she moved on from my father to Steve. And I said,
your husband.
My husband, who was paying for my flights, paying for my car, paying for my hotel. And I said, if you don't want me here, you know, it's entirely up to you. Stop bad-mouthing him. She learned. I was saying no to her.
Yeah,
about
absolutely.
Specific things.
How did it feel? Was
empowering.
It hard at first?
No, it was harder keeping my mouth shut and not and not taking the bait that she was putting out to start arguments, because that was like her power, and I just took the power back by saying, that's it, no more, stop it.
You know, we're going through the same thing with Charlene's mother, because she has dementia and doesn't know it or acknowledge it.
Right.
So she's, because you're in denial about your dementia and you want to keep convincing yourself that everything's okay, you become delusional. You have to make up delusions about why one and one don't equal two, you know, or don't equal three rather. And you make up stories. Well, I can't find all these things because someone's breaking into my house and stealing them, you know?
Right.
And then when I find them, well, they broke into my house and put it back because they felt guilty. Just asinine, insane things. And yes, she loves also to complain. And one of the people that she loves to complain about is me. I'm the guy
right.
who paid for everything.
Everything.
I bought her a house. I bought her a car. I made the mortgage payments, the insurance payments, the homeowners' payments I don't want to talk about her, but anyway,
yes,
the
you
point
do.
Is,
I can tell you do.
So lately, you know, she lives about 2.5 hours away, so we go periodically. But the last time, she's been getting nastier and nastier toward me, and I've found out from other people, because she tells everybody, she talks about me behind my back, and she says that, you know, I'm trying to drive her insane. I'm trying to kill her. I'm trying to steal her house and all of these things. And so I said, you know what? I confronted her, even in her mind that she thinks is normal. And I just said, if that's the way you really feel about me, then I should stay away, because all I do is upset you.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't talk for, a couple of months. And then she started calling me, and I didn't take her calls. And I'd listen to the message and say, "Oh, David, you know, I can't find my the check. Charlene sent me a $20 check for Mother's Day, and I can't find it. Would you? I think someone stole it. So stop payment on it and blah blah blah. You know, the bait. You know, and I didn't take it. I just called her son, Charlene's brother. And I says, you know, she's calling me, because he even recommended that I don't speak to her because it upsets her. You know. I says, talk to her, tell her, you know, stop calling. And so by the fifth or sixth or seventh time, you know, we spoke again to her, the brother. I'm spending way too much time on this, but, maybe someone needs to hear it.
It's not an uncommon issue.
So he says, well, and then I just started thinking, I says, you know, she's reaching out, she's being nice. Maybe I should just take advantage of this and use it as an opportunity, because I had installed cameras up there, because it's the only way to see what's going on. And one's in her bedroom, and one's in the kitchen, one's in the garage, and one's in the TV room. And somehow she got in her mind that she didn't want one in her bedroom, because I could see her naked or dressing, and And I assured her, you know, the last thing I want to see is a 94-year-old woman dressing. So trust me, I am not looking. Besides, it's looking at the door. I just want to see, you know, if you fell down and you're on the floor, you know, or something. I can't really see the you know, right. the beginning of the bed and stuff. And so, you know, she went through the, and she ripped out all the wires and I lost signal. And I said, well, you know, I'm not going up there to fix it, you know. So then she started calling and she said, well, you know, the thing doesn't work. I says, well, you told me you didn't want it anymore, you know, because that's what started the fights, is because the cameras were going to solve the problem. And we'll see once and for all who's breaking into my house.
Who's breaking in?
And she'd call me in the middle of the night and she says, look at the cameras. There's somebody. And I'm looking. And I said, no, there's nobody there, you know, just the cat. The cat's moving around. Oh, okay. So now she wants it back. And I says, well, you tore it out, you know, and you told me you didn't want me watching you undress. And no, I'm so I'm going to take Charlene up there. I think she really wants to see her daughter.
Charlene.
And she's just sucking up to me. So we're going up there tonight. I'm going to spend a couple of days up there. And I'm going to childproof that machine so that she cannot rip wire, you know, because you could lock them so that a thief can't steal them. And I'm going to hide it so she can't see it. So I'm going to make it childproof. Because, you know, the brother will call me up. Is she okay up there? You know, and I said, I don't know. The thing doesn't work anymore. So that was a long story to just prove a point.
Does she have one of the buttons? I've fallen in. I can't
get
up?
Yes, she has. And she pushes it all the time, five times a day, three times a night. The fire department comes every single time, and they're sweet. But they're telling us, you know, I says, she really shouldn't be alone. I says, we know that. We took her to the hospital. You know, convincing her that that it wasn't safe here because people keep breaking in, and they had her for like 4 days, and then we were going to move her into a facility, and the dummies sent her back home because they says, I'm sorry, we can't hold her for mental issues, just physical issues, because all these laws, you know, where the kids try to commit their parents, you know, unnecessarily. And so now the pendulum is swung too far that way. Now they're protecting parents that need to be protected from themselves. Whereas before, kids were just committing them and you know, robbing
getting
them of
rid
the assets.
Of them. Yeah.
So there's got to be a balance somewhere. So I don't know what the answer is, but listen, let's take a break. We've got a new commercial. It's not kind of, it's not really a commercial. It's one of my show segments that I did. So it's going to be fun to watch.
Promo.
It's a promo. Thanks, Adrian. All right, so we'll be right back. Don't go away.
65.7 million adults in the United States are unpaid caregivers. And, you know, we do this because we take care of our family. We love our family. We want to make sure they're getting the right care. But just because you're a caregiver doesn't mean you have to give up your life. I'm joined now by bestselling author Dave Nassani. Good morning to you. Good morning. Thank you so much for this is really interesting because, you know, a lot of times when people think about being a caregiver for a family member, they feel like, okay, I have to give up everything that I'm doing in my life, but that's not the case.
That's not the case. Unfortunately, it's the case for many who are caregivers.
You're right.
But, you know, they just don't realize that, like the airlines tell us, put your oxygen mask on first.
Okay.
And then you can help your loved ones with their mask. On the other hand, caregivers just give and give and give, and then there's nothing left to give, and then they burn out, and now they're both in trouble.
Right. And so with this, you have some things that people can do to to reclaim their caregiver sanity. I like the way you put that. All right, so what's something that people can do in order to do
that? Well, obviously, the first thing that they can do is put their needs first, you know, like the airlines told us. I mean, what a great metaphor for all of life. If you can't take care of you, how are you going to take care of anybody else?
That's very true.
And the other thing is ask for help. Mm-hmm. So many people, they think that asking for help, I'm talking about caregivers, that it would make them a failure as a caregiver. You know, I'm a caregiver, I should be able to do this. But no, nobody can do it. You need help. So you have to reach out your hand and ask people for help. And when they do offer to help, be specific. Tell them, you know, I need lettuce at the store. Can you pick it up at 6 o'clock? No, well, how about tomorrow at 7? You know, don't let them off the hook. Be specific.
What do you say to people who are watching this, they're taking care of a parent or a loved one or something like a husband or a wife or something like that, and they say, oh, if I do that, I feel guilty?
Yes, guilt is a biggie, you mm-hmm. know, but I like to say that there's undeserved guilt. And I think of Sanford and Son, you know, Fred Sanford, how he'd always say, Elizabeth,
right.
I'm coming to join you. Yeah. And he could get his son Lamont to do anything he wanted. Mm-hmm. But that's undeserved guilt, you see. Guilt is like a traffic cop. Say, hey, are you doing something wrong? You know, to stop and ponder.
Right.
And if you aren't, then just throw that guilt away, just like you would a dirty diaper.
Yeah, and that's a good thing to know that, you know, you don't need to feel guilty in right. order just to maybe give just a little quality, maybe just a soaking bath or something like that. Just those
or
little
a
small
trip
things.
To Starbucks
right.
or a massage or a manicure, mm-hmm. whatever.
Just small things that'll yeah. give you that time you need for yourself.
Yeah, well, that's why I wrote the book.
Mm-hmm. And that, so okay, tell everybody how they can get their hands on this book.
Go to Amazon, and I'm going to steal a line from The Godfather. You know, I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. What we're going to do is we're cutting the Kindle price from $10 down to 99 cents.
Oh, okay.
And that's a 90% reduction, in case you're paying attention.
Yeah.
Just go and type in my name, David mm-hmm. Nassani, or the title of the book, It's My Life Too. And it's only for the Kindle. We have paperbacks also. And so we also have a book signing at Mount Pleasant,
okay.
Barnes & Noble. So come on out, you know, we'll rap, we'll hug, we'll kiss, we'll cry, I don't know. And you don't even have to be a caregiver. Go buy a book for a caregiver, mm-hmm. you know. Not only will you bless them, but you'll probably save their life.
Right.
Because a third of caregivers actually die before their loved ones do. That's
oh,
incredible.
Wow.
And the ones that don't die, well, they just get sicker than the ones they're caring for, right. and then they eventually need a caregiver themselves.
Right, and it goes back to what you said. If you can't take care of yourself, how are you going to take care of someone
it's
else?
It's like Elton John said, it's a sad, sad situation.
Yeah, definitely.
What do we do?
All right, Dave, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for letting us know about this, ways that we can get our caregiver sanity back.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
And we are back with me and Adrian. Adrian and I, boy, I'm bad.
First time I saw that was good.
Really?
Yeah.
Thank you. That was my latest one. So theoretically, that's my best one. It's hard for Charlene to travel. So we did go to Palm Springs together
because
I got a booking
sense.
Down there. And my brother has a place down there. So we killed two birds with one stone. We got to visit with him and go to dinner and have fun and all of that stuff. So I'm trying to get another local one in Fresno, California, that she can come to. But, you know, it's too hard to hop on a plane. Well, I didn't realize how hard it is flying when you have to, you know, on a plane for 8 hours and, you know, switching planes and all that. But I'm spending $28 more to get the emergency seats. There's a lot more extra legroom.
It's worth it.
without spending the ridiculous amount of first class. So let's talk about what you need to live a fulfilled, happy life. Do caregivers deserve to be happy and to have fun, you know?
Fun is a hard thing to find when you're caregiving, I think. But fulfilling, oh, I think that can happen easily.
Now, taking care of loved ones can be difficult. Here to share his story and how he can help you take better care of your loved ones is David Nassani, and joining him is his wife, Charlene. Hi, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for having me.
All the way from Santa Clarita.
Yes.
All the way.
We love it. Beautiful faces. Again, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Take a minute to tell myself and the viewers a bit about what brought you to this point.
Well, this is my wife, Charlene. She's beautiful, mm-hmm. and we've been married 42 wonderful years.
Wow.
But 21 years ago, something happened. She had a headache, the headache of her life, she said. She wanted to call Dr. Kevorkian to put her out of her misery. It was that bad. But to make a long story short, she had a stroke, massive stroke, that resulted in her being speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Mm-hmm. And we went through a couple of years of hell, the grief process. But as a result of all of that, I learned that there's a lot of other caregivers out there. I made a lot of mistakes. I wanted to teach them and show them what not to do. So I became Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver. And so I host a podcast to caregivers that is called Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver. And I'm also a best-selling author on Amazon. It's My Life Too, Reclaim Your Caregiver Sanity by Learning When to Say Yes mm-hmm. and When to Say No.
Get a close-up of that real quick. So you're needed.
I am needed. Yeah.
You are very yes. much needed.
I am
you're
needed.
Kind of one of a kind,
yes.
right?
Yep.
Yes.
Wow, this is fascinating. So tell me this, because I'm kind of green in this department. How many caregivers are taking care of their loved ones?
Oh, well, Brian, there's about over 65 yes. million adults in the U.S. who are unpaid caregivers. Mm-hmm. And this includes celebrities like Dwayne The Rock Johnson, The Fonz, Henry Winkler, Hillary Clinton, and Queen Latifah. And even they are not immune from allowing or preventing their loved one's illness from actually killing them. Because that's the title of what I'm here today. You know, we want to, about a third of the caregivers actually die before their loved ones do. And those that don't become sicker than the ones they're caring for, and they actually need a caregiver themselves. So this
you're blowing my mind right now.
Yeah.
My sister's a caregiver to my niece. So what's interesting about this is it's not even one degree of separation. This affects everybody, right?
Yes. I say there's three kinds of people in the world. You're either a caregiver, you're going to become a caregiver, or you're going to need a caregiver. So there's no escaping it.
Yeah, there isn't. Wow. What are three biggest mistakes caregivers should avoid?
Well, the first mistake, I'm going to use this prop here. I tried to get an airline oxygen mask, but they said I needed to be a Medicare recipient. Why don't you try to put that on? And this will explain, the airlines tell us in the event of an emergency, put your oxygen mask on first before you attempt to help your loved ones with their mask.
Okay.
So you see, this will help your viewers see that unless you take care of your needs first, you can't take care of your loved ones.
The
second mistake, do you have a cell phone?
I do.
Well, use it. Call your brother, call your sister, call your wife's ex-husband, call your kids, whoever. Caregivers need to ask for help. You see, there's something about caregivers that asking for help makes them feel like a failure as a caregiver. I should be able to do this myself. No, I don't need any help.
Yeah.
And then believe it or not, people come up and say, hey, is there anything I can do to help? And they say, no, I got it. Pull out a notepad and say, well, yes, actually, on Friday at 3 o'clock, I could use someone to go to the grocery store.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm busy at 5. Oh, well, then Saturday at 2 o'clock, I've got, no. Well, Sunday, don't let them off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing you can do is, here, put your hand in that. So
we got to wrap it up.
You've got to not let guilt affect your decisions. Mm-hmm. See, it's like being handcuffed to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And guilt will actually kill you.
See, this is more reason for you to order this book, folks. The information was just popped up. You can find the Kindle version of this book for 99 cents on Amazon. No excuses. A big thanks to these two for stopping by. A big thanks to you. That does it for us today. Have a great day. We'll see you soon. And I'm keeping it.
Hey, this is Dave. Welcome back. But unfortunately, we're going to have to end the show here because my mic went out and Adrian's was working, but it's like listening to a one-way conversation on the telephone. It just won't make any sense to you. So you got a half a show. Better luck next week. I got to call tech support and see what the heck happened. So God bless, and we'll see you next week. Thanks.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.